ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। भगवते वासुदेवाय।
From chapter 4, verse number 11.
यथा मां प्रपद्यन्ते तांस्तथैव भजाम्यहम्। मम वर्तमानु वर्तन्ते मनुष्याः पार्थ सर्वशः, ये यथा मां प्रपद्यन्ते तांस्तथैव भजाम्यहम्। मम वर्तमानु वर्तन्ते मनुष्याः पार्थ सर्वशः, ये यथा मां प्रपद्यन्ते तांस्तथैव भजाम्यहम्। मम वर्तमानु वर्तन्ते मनुष्यः पार्थ सर्वशः।
Translation by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. All of them, as they surrender unto me, I reward accordingly. Everyone follows my path in all respects, O son of Pritha. Please repeat. All of them, as they surrender unto me, I reward accordingly. Accordingly. Everyone follows my path in all respects, O son of Pritha.
नमो विष्णुपादाय कृष्णप्रेष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदान्त स्वामीनिति नामिने। नमस्ते सरस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्य देशतारिणे। जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्तवृंद। हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे।
As they surrender unto me, I reward accordingly. Everyone follows my path in all respects, O son of Pritha. This shloka of the Bhagavad Gita is very important because it tells us one very important fact. That is, that everyone is looking for God. Some people know it and some people don't. But the fact remains that everyone is looking for Krishna. And according to their level of knowledge or the level of ignorance, they are seeking Krishna in their own different way. Krishna means all attractive. The Supreme Lord must be all attractive by definition, otherwise he cannot be the Supreme Lord. God must include himself within himself all attractive attributes. Everything that we find attractive in this world and much more must be within God. Otherwise, how can he be God? The nature of spirit is anandamayo abhyasat. By nature, spirit is blissful. Even the jivatma by nature is sat chit ananda, which means it is eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss. And the spirit soul is only one small tiny particle of the Supreme Lord. Mamai vamsha jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatanaha. So the tiny particle of the spirit soul or the jivatma is blissful by nature, anandamayo bhyasat. Then we can imagine that the Supreme Lord must also be infinitely more blissful So we are all seeking bliss. We are all seeking to move towards something attractive in life. So in other words, we are seeking Krishna, but we don't know the object of our efforts. We don't know whom we are seeking actually. But whether somebody is a devotee of the Lord or he is not a devotee, actually he is seeking Krishna. So Lord Krishna is describing here that as the different varieties of people try to approach him, he rewards them accordingly, according to their qualification, according to their capacity. So he says, Ye yatha mam prapadyante. As people surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. Now, I would like to introduce a little a philosophical point which may appear to be a little dry. Normally in these Bhagavad Gita classes we do have some stories and some this and that, but sometimes you also have to go into a bit of philosophy. There are a few points which we have to apply our mind to be able to understand this philosophy of Bhagavad Gita very nicely. So for a while we will dwell on certain important philosophical points. The absolute truth of the Supreme Lord is to be understood in three phases, in three aspects. In the Srimad Bhagavatam there is a shloka which says, Vadanti tat tattva vidas tattvam yad jnanam advayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavan iti shabdyate. What this verse says is that the Supreme Lord or God is understood according to one's own vision in three different levels. The first level is called Brahman, the second level is called Paramatma, and the third level is called Bhagavan or the Supreme Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Brahman means the impersonal aspect of the Lord. Paramatma is the localized aspect of the Lord who is situated in every living being's heart. And Bhagavan means the personality of God, the person Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now we may give a very simple example to illustrate these threefold aspects of the one Supreme Lord. Just imagine that you're going towards a mountain. Let's say you're flying in an aeroplane and you're going towards a mountain. From a distance, the mountain appears to be only a hazy spot. You can make out there is something there. There is a lump of matter. But you can't make out anything more. As you approach the mountain closer, you see that there is some green, you see some greenery on top of that. So it appears to be a green mountain. But as you approach even closer and closer, then you can see that there is infinite variegatedness on that mountain. There are different varieties of trees, there is grass, there are huts and houses, there are people, there are birds, there are animals. So you see the different varieties. In other words, the mountain is the same, but it is a question of our vision. Depending on how far you are from the mountain will appear different to you. So therefore, spiritually also, God is like that mountain. And different people are observing God or trying to understand God from different points of vision. So somebody thinks that he is Brahman, somebody thinks that he is Paramatma, and there are some who understand that he is Bhagavan or the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is called the transcendental realization of the Lord. So naturally those who are seeking God directly, they try to seek God in these three levels. But what about those who are not obviously seeking God? Those who are materialistic, they are also seeking God, but they don't know it. So among the different classes of people in existence, we can classify them into two categories. One is called the materialist, who is after material enjoyment, worldly enjoyment. And the second is called the transcendentalist. What do we mean by the transcendentalist? He is the person who is striving to transcend the material sphere. He wants to go beyond the sphere of material enjoyment. He says that this material enjoyment is for those who are less intelligent. He understands the temporary nature of worldly life, so he wants to transcend it. Therefore, he is called a transcendentalist or a spiritualist. So we have the materialist on one hand and we have the transcendentalists. Now very obviously the materialists are completely in ignorance because they do not understand that God is controlling everything. They have no object of life. They have no idea that to become a devotee of the Lord is the goal of life. They have no spiritual knowledge whatsoever. So you may ask, how is it that they are seeking God? Because they are seeking pleasure. Because they are seeking knowledge, because they are seeking eternal life. They are seeking all those things which are already existing in God. So these attributes are to be found only in God. So they are seeking God, but they don't know it. On the other hand, the transcendentalists are directly trying to seek God on the transcendental or the spiritual platform. And even among these classes of people, there is a gradation. Those who are seeking the Brahman, they are considered inferior to those who are seeking Paramatma. And those who are seeking Paramatma are considered inferior to those who are seeking Bhagavan or the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So even among the kind of transcendentalists, we have three. Who are they? Who are the three kinds of transcendentalists? Yes? Yes, who are the people who seek Brahman? What is the kind of, the class of people called? The Jnanis. Those who are following the Jnana Marga, Jnana Yoga, they are called the Jnanis. They seek the Brahman. Who are the people who seek the Paramatma, the Lord in the heart? Yes, the Yogis. Now, we have devoted two whole sessions exclusively to discussing the Paramatma in the heart, right? And at that time we also discussed Dhyana Vastita Tadgatayana Manasa Pashyanti Yama Yoginaha. So these Yogis, they are trying to understand the Lord in the heart, the Paramatma. So they are the Dhyana Yogis or the Ashtanga Yogis. Then the third class of people who are seeking Bhagavan or Shri Krishna, what are they called? The Bhaktas or the devotees. So we can see there is a gradation. So there are three levels of understanding the Absolute Truth, and according to that there are three kinds of transcendentalists: the Jnani, the Yogi and the Bhakta. And each is going to see according to his own vision. Now what is Brahman actually? Can anyone say what is Brahman? You've all heard this, Aham Brahmasmi, or you heard the word Brahman. But what exactly is Brahman? Who would like to say? What is Brahman? Bodily effulgence of the Lord. Very good. Brahman means, let's give an example. There is a sun. You see the sun every day, but not always directly. You see the sunshine and you understand that the sun is present. So sunshine is the bodily effulgence of the sun. The radiation coming from the sun is the sunshine. Now, when you go beyond the sunshine and you look up into the sky, you see the sun. So the sunshine has a source, and that is the sun disk. But is the sun disk also operating by itself? There is a predominating deity called the sun god. Just like when you come into this country, let us say there is a foreigner who comes into India. He comes in here and he sees that things are moving on. Of course, there is so much chaos, but still things are going on somehow or the other. In fact, one Russian person came here, and as you know, Russians, they follow, at least they used to follow once upon a time, communism. And this Marxist philosophy is an atheistic philosophy. So they do not believe in God. So when this Russian man came here, he saw that there was so much chaos and so much confusion that he remarked, "Now I have begun to believe in God, because there is only God who can run this country. Nobody else. Otherwise it is not possible that this country is staying together and somehow or the other this country is functioning." So anyway, but still you come here, you understand that there is some control going on. So you are seeing the impersonal functionaries in various departments. The railways are going on, the transport is going on, water supply, this, that, everything is going on. But behind them there are people. So you understand that making all these things function, there are certain people. Similarly, the sun is a powerhouse. And behind the powerhouse there is a predominating deity, a person who is responsible for the functioning of the sun, and he is called the sun god. Now you may ask, how is it possible for somebody to live in the sun? You see, in the Bhagavad Gita it is described that this material body is made up of five elements. What are those five elements? Earth, water, fire, air and ether. This gross material body. And then there is mind, intelligence and ego. So in this earth planet, we are accustomed to seeing bodies which are primarily made of earth and water. But there are other spheres in other dimensions in this material world where living entities are made up, their bodies are made up of different substances among these five. There are other living, in other planets there are living entities whose bodies are made up of primarily of fire. There are planets in which the bodies are primarily made of air, bodies which are primarily made of ether. But because we have no conception of these, therefore we think that these things don't exist. So in the sun planet, in the sun, which is fiery, full of fire, the living entities, their body is very subtle. It's not like this kind of body that we have. If we go anywhere near a fire, we get burnt. You can't tolerate the heat even a few feet from the fire. But that is because we don't have the appropriate kind of body to exist near the fire. But those living entities who have a material body that is made of the fiery element, they are existing within the sun. So Vivaswan is the name of the sun god. So you have the sunshine, you have the sun globe, and you have the sun deity within the sun. So we understand by analogy that you have the Brahman, that is the Paramatma, and there is the Bhagwan Shri Krishna. So what is the main predominating force in the sun? That's the sun god. Similarly, in this entire creation, the Supreme Lord is a Supreme Person. He is a person, as we have discussed many times in the earlier parts of these sessions, that Krishna, the Supreme Lord, is a person, but he is not an ordinary person like you and me. He is a Supreme Person. But nevertheless, he is a person. And from him comes the Brahman, which is the bodily effulgence of the Lord. And this bodily effulgence is called the Brahman. And that same Lord Krishna expands himself unlimitedly to occupy the hearts of every living entity. Whether it's the ant or the plant or the human being or the animal, Lord Krishna is present as the Paramatma all over, in everyone's heart, and also in the atom. So in this way, Lord Krishna is a source of the Paramatma and is a source of the Brahman. So this is the threefold aspect of the Absolute Truth. Now, according to the level of people who want to understand God, God will manifest himself according to that. So to the person who is a jnani, the Supreme Truth, the Supreme Lord manifests himself in his impersonal feature. For those who are following the Dhyana Yoga Mark, the Lord manifests himself in that feature. And for those who are devotees, Lord Krishna manifests himself in his own self-same personal form. So these are different grades of understanding. We should know that the person who understands Krishna, the Supreme Person, is the highest, because he understands the essence. It is simply a matter of coming to know God very closely. Sometimes people ask the question, can I see God? Or can you show me God? Yes, we can see God, but we have to get qualified. The question is prapatti. Prapatti means surrender. Do we have the qualification of surrender? If we don't have the qualification of surrender or love, we cannot see God. Just like the president of this country, can you and I simply walk into his office and demand that I want to see the president? You and I can't do it. We have to get a qualification. We will first have to go to the secretary, and then he may or may not give us an appointment, and then after a long string of formalities, ultimately we may be able to get an appointment, and that too just for a few seconds. Very difficult. Most likely we will be rejected. But the president's personal friend, he can walk into the president's cabin anytime he likes. He need not even knock the door. He can just go and come. Why? Because there is that loving relationship. So the question is, do you have that loving relationship by which you can see God? So the key factor is, the qualification for seeing God is to develop that loving relationship. And that is what Lord Krishna is saying here. Ye yatha mam prapadyante. You have to qualify yourself to be able to see me. And according to the level of your qualification, I will reveal myself to you proportionately. So this formula, ye yatha mam prapadyante, is very important. It is a formula of reciprocation, reciprocal relationship between two people. A relationship can take place only between people. It can't take place between two dead things or inanimate objects. So Lord Krishna is saying, to the extent, why should I place myself indirectly under the control of the Lord? I have to be under God's control anyway. So why should I not submit myself directly to the control of the Lord? Why should I do it indirectly and then suffer in the process? This material energy is very strong. We should not underestimate the power of this material energy. There is one very great saint called Markandeya Rishi. So ask me whatever boon you like and I will grant it. So Markandeya Rishi, he was a great devotee, but he was not 100% pure devotee. His devotion was a little mixed. He wanted, it was Jnana Mishra Bhakti, which means it was mixed with a little desire for some knowledge here and there. So he said, my Lord, I want to know the power of your Maya. How strong is your material energy? How strong is your Maya Shakti? I want to know that. Please demonstrate the power to me and let me see it. So Lord Krishna had to fulfill the desires of everyone, what to speak of his devotees. So he said, all right, tathastu, so be it. So at that time, Markandeya Rishi was sitting in his ashram under a tree when the Lord appeared before him. And all of a sudden, he found himself transported into the middle of a very turbulent ocean. The ocean was very, very turbulent. The waves were going high. Practically, it seemed as if the ocean, the waves were going up to the sky. And there was a great storm. And Markandeya Rishi found himself being tossed up and tossed down. Tossed up and tossed down. And he became very much fearful. He became very, very fearful. And he began to wonder, what is happening now? And the storm just went on and on and on. And all the time he was just being swayed here and swayed there. As you know, even in a swimming pool, sometimes when you start feeling that you're drowning, you become very fearful. And those of you who have swum in the sea, you know, sometimes it can be very dangerous. So many people die off the coast of Juhu Beach also. So he was in the middle of the ocean where there is nobody to help. So in this condition, he became very, very fearful. And at that time he was wondering, what is going on? And the situation seemed to go on and on and on. He was not even dying. And he was not even able to live properly. And this way time went on and on and on. And actually, thousands of years went on. And neither was he dying, nor was he able to live properly. So thousands of years this thing was going on and on and on. And Markandeya Rishi his intelligence was getting completely bewildered. He just didn't know what was happening. And everywhere around there was simply water and more water. And then one day, as he was just simply floating, he was not even drowning. Somehow there was some energy that kept him floating. And he was floating and floating. All of a sudden, he found some movement, something different in the distance. So he started swimming towards it. And as he went towards it, he saw that there was a big lotus leaf, a green colored lotus leaf. And on that lotus leaf, there was some light blue colored object. And when he approached that object, what did he see? It was a small child. A small child who had a bluish complexion, like the complexion of a dark blue monsoon cloud. Who was that person? Phantom? Krishna. It was Krishna. Baby Krishna. So baby Krishna was there and he was sucking on his toe. Just like a normal child, sometimes a 2-month-old child, the children suck on their toe. So baby Krishna was floating on that lotus leaf and he was sucking on his toe, on his own toe. So Markandeya Rishi saw this most astounding vision in the middle of the ocean where he had been swimming for what appeared like thousands of years. And he suddenly, all his fear, first of all, naturally he was bewildered. He just didn't know what's going on. And then when he saw the beauty of this little child, all his confusion, all his misery, all his distress completely vanished. And immediately he became peaceful. And at that time, the moment he became peaceful, the whole vision disappeared. And what did he find himself in? Back in his ashram, sitting under the tree. Where he was, dry as anything. So then he understood, this is the Maya Shakti of the Lord, how powerful Maya is. Maya is practically as powerful as the Lord, this material energy. It is said in the Brahma Samhita, Brahmaji says, Srishti Sthiti Pralaya Sadhana Shakti Reva Chayeva Yasya Bhuvanani Vibharti Durga Ichhanurupam apiyasya cheshtate sa Govindamadi purusham tamaham bhajami. This Maya is known as Shakti, represented by Durga. Durga or Maya or Shakti is the material energy. And she is the one who is subjecting all the living entities in this material world to a stringent control. And she is the one who is the agent for creation, maintenance and destruction. And she is like the shadow of the Lord. Chayeva yasya. So she is like the shadow of the Lord. She has no independent movement or existence. Just like sometimes if I move my finger in front of the light, then my shadow will also move accordingly. The shadow cannot move in one way, my finger in another way. So similarly, Durga Devi or Maya or the material energy moves only according to the sanction of the Lord. Mayadhakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharam. So, in this way we find that the material energy is also the representative of the Lord. And she is subjecting all the living entities in this world who are rebelling against the direct surrender to the Lord. She is subjecting them to her stringent control. So, in other words, the point is that you cannot escape being controlled by the Lord. So, why not directly submit ourselves and be happy? This is the process that an intelligent person performs. He surrenders. He says, enough of rebellion now. Just like a criminal. Now criminal, sometimes he tries to run away from the police. And he runs and runs and runs. He's hounded by the police. Recently there was a big scandal somewhere in Maharashtra. and the main accused was absconding. And he was running here, running there, and the police was at his tail trying to search him here and there. And finally they got him. So finally you see a criminal may run and run and run, and then he realizes the futility of being hounded in this way, so he says, okay, I give up. So similarly, that is intelligence. Why should you unnecessarily run away? How far can you run away? So the intelligent person understands, I have been running away from Krishna for millions and millions of lifetimes. Enough is enough. Let me now surrender to Krishna and be happy. So he comes to the transcendental platform. Then he understands, he tries to understand the absolute truth. This Brahman, this Paramatma, Bhagwan, what are all these different three stages of understanding? Then he develops knowledge and he is able to understand. So we can understand that the Brahman level is the stage of perfection, where he has reached perfection. Lord Krishna says 1% perfection, 1% surrender, 1% perfection. 25% surrender, 25% perfection. 100% surrender, 100% perfection. So Brahman level is also perfection. But in this stage of perfection there is, in spiritual life there is more perfect, even more perfect, most perfect, even most perfect, and it goes on. So the stage of perfection also has many, many stages. So Brahman is also good. You are situated on the spiritual platform. You have understood that I am not this body. You have understood I am the spirit soul. Aham Brahmasmi. So therefore you are Brahmabhuta, Prasannatma. You are always peaceful. Na shochati, na kankshati. You don't hanker for anything. You don't lament for anything. So you see all living entities equally, spiritually. So you are peaceful. So that is perfect. But there is more perfect. The yogi. He understands that the Lord has form. It is not that the Lord is simply impersonal. The Lord has form. And that form is the 400 form of Vishnu. So he sees that. But his devotion is not matured. So he is not able to experience the bliss that the devotee experiences. And as his knowledge and devotion mature, he comes to the even more perfect stage, the stage of the devotee of the Lord. And as a bhakta, he is now properly fixed and situated. He understands that Lord Sri Krishna is the Supreme Person. And I am exchanging rasa. Rasa means mellow. I am expressing various flavors of bhakti or love with the Supreme Lord. And this flavor or exchange of relationships is very, very relishable. So he is perfectly fixed. But now the question is, even after you come to the stage of bhakti or bhakta, there is still further gradations. Lord Krishna says, this proportionate relationship doesn't stop here. Even when you become a bhakta, still there is most perfect, even more perfect, even more perfect. The spiritual life is unending, limitless. So you can even reach higher and higher and higher platform once you become a bhakta. So, just like in this material world, we see that there are many, many relationships, isn't it? And all these relationships exist. Why? Because they have their source in Krishna. The relationship between a father and a mother, the relationship between husband and wife, the relationship between son and father, daughter and mother, relationship between friend and friend, servant and master, all these relationships exist because they exist in the Lord. So therefore, even in the bhakti stage, there are all these relationships. And these stages are called shanta, which means the neutral stage. In the neutral stage, we have a relationship of awe and reverence with the Lord. Then there is the dasya stage, where we relate with the Lord as a servant. There is a sakya stage, where we relate with the Lord as a friend, as a equal. There is the vatsalya stage, where we relate with the Lord as a superior, as a parent. And finally, there is the madhurya stage, where we relate with the Lord in a more conjugal mood. So these different relationships are there. We will discuss them in detail at some other time. But the idea is that these ideas have to be introduced. So even in bhakti, there are stages and stages of more and more and more perfect. And what is that development that you find in these five stages? There is greater and greater intimacy. In the shantaras or the neutral stage, there is a feeling of awe and reverence. Oh, the Lord is so great. He is worthy of my worship. So there is some devotion, but there is a devotion of awe and reverence. But as you become more intimate, then what happens? Now you start seeing the Lord personally as your master. He is my master and I am his servant. And there is a particular flavor attached to that, a particular joy experienced by the servant. And then as the devotion becomes even more intimate, what happens? Now their feeling of awe and reverence disappears completely. And you feel that Krishna is my equal. He is my friend. And then it becomes even more intimate. And when it becomes more intimate, not only is Krishna my equal now, but actually I am his superior. And Krishna is dependent on me for his very survival. That's the feeling. Of course, we are dependent on Krishna for our survival. But the devotion becomes so intense, Krishna likes that kind of devotion. So he makes a devotee think that actually Krishna is dependent on me. And then as we go even further, there is a stage where the devotee doesn't care for any formalities. There is a stage of intense conjugal love. It's completely spiritual, not material. So okay, let us see if we can give examples of each of these forms of bhakti. The form where everyone worships in awe and reverence. God is almighty, he is the all powerful. They don't know exactly who he is. They know there is some God, there is some Bhagwan, there is somebody there. But they don't know exactly who he is, what is his name, what does he look like. There is worship in the Shantaras. Can you give any example of those who are in the Shantaras? In this mood? The four Kumaras. There are four sages called the four Kumaras, the sons of Brahma. They always appear to be 5 years old. They always go around without any clothes. They are 5 years. Look like very small children. They always go together, all four of them. Chatushana, the four Kumaras. And they are in the Shantaras. In that mood of devotion to the Lord. What about the Dasyaras? Any example of those who are in the mood of servant and master? This is very easy. Hanuman. Hanuman is the most famous example of the relationship between the devotee and the Lord being of servant and master. Then what about the Sakhiras? Anyone? Yes? Uddhav, very correct. Who else? Sudama, very good. Yes? Arjun, very good. Then? You see, even among these friends, there is still a friend, an intimate friend, a very intimate friend, and an extremely intimate friend, isn't it? So, we find that, let us say, Uddhav is also Krishna's intimate friend, but not so intimate. Then what about Arjun? He is also intimate. But Arjun would not climb onto Krishna's shoulders, and he would not wrestle with him, isn't it? Who used to do that? Sridharma, all the cowherd boys, when Krishna was playing as a small child in Vrindavan, the cowherd boys with whom he used to go out to graze the cows, they would wrestle with Krishna, they would box Krishna, they would pull his leg, they would steal his tiffin box, they would tease him, they would ridicule him sometimes. This was mutually going on. Even more intimate friends. So they never thought that Krishna is God. Even if somebody told them, they said, we don't care. As far as I'm concerned, Krishna is my friend. Right? So this is even more intimate. And then as you go on, Vatsalyaras, or the mood of parent. Any example? Yashoda, Yashoda Mata, and Nanda Maharaj. Example of parents. Mother Yashoda, she would feel that if my child goes out somewhere, he may eat something wrong, or some other bad thing may happen, he may die, so he needs my protection. And if Krishna was missing even for a short while, she would get very upset. Krishna may die, or he may get some disease, and he will suffer. So she was always thinking that without me, Krishna will die. That's the stage of even higher devotion. Then what about Vatsalyaras or Madhuryaras? Radha, the gopis, and the queens of Dwarka. Even in that, even in each of these stages, there are different gradations. The queens of Dwarka, they related to Krishna in the conjugal mood. So did the gopis of Vrindavan. But there is a gulf of difference between the two. The relationship that the queens had with Krishna was more formal. Whereas the relationship the gopis had with Krishna was not at all formal in any way. So that is the height of devotion. But we should understand that even in the Shantaras, the relationship is completely spiritual. And as you go on, the spiritual relationship becomes more and more intense. There is no trace of any material contamination here. So naturally at the stage of the relationship between the gopis and Krishna, how can there be any trace of material contamination? It is a completely pure spiritual relationship. It is not like the material relationship between man and woman in this world. It is completely spiritual. So, even when you come to the bhakta stage of devotee, there are all these different relationships. So let us summarize. The two kinds of people. Everyone is approaching God, but there are the materialists and there are the transcendentalists. The materialists don't know that I have to approach Krishna. So they are They are going according to, under the control of Maya. They are functioning under the stringent laws of material nature. Then those who are intelligent, they are rejecting the material energy or the stringent laws of material energy, and they want to surrender directly to Krishna. So these transcendentalists, their level begins with the Brahman, higher Paramatma, higher they come to Bhagavan, they become Bhakta. Even after having become Bhakta, they relate to Krishna in different ways, according to Shantaras, Dasyaras, Sakyaras, Vatsalyaras, and finally Madhuryaras. So can you now see the whole point of the lecture? According to the mood in which you want to relate to Krishna, Krishna will relate to you. That is the sum and substance of this whole verse. So why have I given this long story? Starting from the materialist, the jnani, the yogi, the bhakta, and even in the bhakta, all these different grades of relationships. Why? Because everyone is looking at Krishna differently. And according to the way you want to look at Krishna, Krishna says, reciprocally, proportionately, I will deal with you. Huh? The four Kumaras, they are in the Shantaras. So Krishna doesn't go and play with them. Similarly, let us say Hanuman. Have you ever heard of Hanuman trying to pat Ramachandra, Lord Ramachandra on the back? It doesn't happen. Because that is not his mood. Hanuman wants to deal with Ramachandra in the mood of servant. So Lord Ramachandra deals with him in that way. Similarly, the Gopas, they don't care. They don't want to deal with Krishna in his Vaikuntha mood, four-armed mood of Vishnu or Narayan, granting benedictions, tathastu. They say, we don't care for your benedictions, right? So according to the kind of mood in which you want, the Jivatma wants, Krishna will reciprocate. So just see how wonderful Krishna is. Whatever you desire to relate to him, and if you want to forget him also, he helps you to forget him. And in that way to relate to his inferior material energy. So it's simply a matter of proportionate reciprocal relationship. That is the sum and substance of the verse. So what should we do? We should try to strike up a personal relationship with Krishna. Because we are eternally persons, Krishna is a person. And there is a relationship eternally existing between these two persons, you and Krishna, me and Krishna. But we have forgotten that. And this bhakti marg is there to develop that relationship once again. We have forgotten it. We have to revive it. That is what Krishna consciousness is all about. So whatever the mood in which you want to relate to Krishna, Krishna says, okay, come on, I will accept you, even in the path of devotion. So it is not for us to speculate now, whether I am in mood of Sakya Ras or this Ras or that Ras. That is elevated subject matter. We don't know, and we will not know till we become pure devotees of the Lord. All we have to know right now is, I want to become a pure devotee of Krishna. That's all. And then at the proper time, Lord Krishna will reveal everything to us. And the process for reaching that stage of purity, where we can understand thoroughly our pure relationship with Krishna, is to chant the holy name. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Even when you're chanting the holy name, if you want to approach the holy name simply as a means of entertainment, then you can go to some commercial singers. Krishna will send you to some commercial singers, where they will sing very melodiously. They are very, very nice singers, but there will be no bhakti, because you want simply entertainment from the holy name. So you will get that. So even the holy name is not different from Krishna. So the holy name will also relate to you according to your desire. If you want to relate to the holy name in a very sleepy way, in a material way, so the holy name will also relate to you in that way, as a material sound. And if you want to relate to the holy name in a personal way, in devotion, then the holy name will make you a pure devotee. So we should try to relate to this Hare Krishna Maha Mantra and the holy name of the Lord in a very devotional mood, in a very prayerful mood, in a very attentive mood. Then the holy name will automatically reveal to us the relationship we have with Krishna. Hare Krishna. We will stop here. Any questions? Till the darshan opens, we will have question. And then maybe if the questions, after that, after the darshan.
So in one sense you said there is perfect, more perfect, and still. So does it mean that the gopis were better than Hanuman?
Yes and no. Yes, objectively speaking, that their intensity of love for Krishna is unparalleled. So in one sense they are higher. But in another sense, each jiva is completely satisfied according to his relationship. Hanuman doesn't envy the gopis, right? Neither do the cowherd boys envy the gopis. They're all happy in their own particular mood. That is the meaning of spiritual relationship. Whatever spiritual relationship you have with the Lord, in bhakti, mind you, the platform for all these relationships is bhakti. Without bhakti, there's no question of striking any personal relationship with the Lord. So, in each relationship, whatever the mood that you have, you are completely satisfied with each. You don't hanker for any other mood. So in that sense, there is no question of inferiority and superiority. But in the sense of intensity, looking at it from an objective point of view, the gopis are considered to have the highest devotion for Krishna. Because there is absolutely no trace of any kind of formality there. So we'll stop here, and if there are any questions, then we will continue after the darshan. Now kindly participate in the kirtan and the darshan. Hare Krishna. After this most wonderful kirtan and darshan, I'm sure all of you want to now surrender completely to Krishna, right? So are there any questions?
Related to my previous question, like Hanumanji, of course, in the Dasya relationship is so popular, people worship him all over India. We don't hear anything about Arjun or Sudama, or even though they also were very intimate. Same time again about gopis, we see most of the places in India. Krishna is worshipped alone, like in Dwarka, it is just alone. But we have Radharani, the supreme gopi. So how do we understand this, that we have different worships? In one sense, they were pure devotees, but we know only about Hanumanji as pure devotee being worshipped.
Well, you see, there are different bhavas or moods for worshipping the Lord. And according to the particular nature, your spiritual nature, you have a particular mood in which you worship the Supreme Lord. But the higher realms of bhakti are very confidential matters that only are accessible to those who have surrendered completely. Therefore, we find it rare that the higher realms of devotional service are not much discussed, and they are not much popular also. So it is not that one form of devotion is inferior to the other, but nevertheless, forms like the forms of devotion, especially of a servant and master, are more readily appreciated and accepted by the people at large, because it is in keeping with their mentality of who God is. But when you talk of dealing with God as an equal, or you talk of dealing with God as a superior, or you talk of dealing with God in a conjugal mood, then it is not always acceptable in all lands. For example, in the Christian religion, God is called the Almighty. Now, you can never think of a Vatsali relationship with Jehovah. You can't think, the Christians can never think in terms of developing a relationship of close friendship like the cowherd boys did with Krishna. So it's simply a question of what mood of devotional service or bhakti that we have developed. Each jivatma has a particular mood. But nevertheless, each jivatma by nature is a bhakta, is a devotee. And whether it is this mood or that mood, important thing is that we have to bring out that bhakti once again, which is already there in the heart. That is the important process. It doesn't so much matter whether you want to be in the mood of Hanuman or you want to be in the mood of the cowherd boys. That's not a very important thing. The important thing is we should try to revive that process now.
Bombay and Delhi. God is at Delhi and Maya is at Bombay.
Something like that.
And the cars are in between.
Yes.
God controls the highway. Means you cannot go beyond the boundaries of the highway. But then at the same time, why doesn't God control all the cars to go only towards Delhi? Why allow some of them to go towards Bombay?
That's the meaning of yayatha mam prapadyante.
No,
as you surrender, I reward accordingly. I fulfill your desires from time immemorial, Lord Krishna says.
Let the cars not have a steering wheel. Let there be a magnetic attraction from Delhi, whereby which all the cars go only towards Delhi.
What is the meaning of bhakti without free will? What is the meaning of love without giving the person any chance to not love? You see, freedom, bhakti rests upon the foundation of free will. You take away that free will, and what is the use of your bhakti? It is not bhakti at all, it is not love. You cannot force someone to love you at gunpoint. You hold a gun to the person's head and say, love me or else. Is that possible? Well, he may make some gestures of love, but actually, that is not true love. Even if you hypnotize somebody to love you, and that person is acting genuinely like that, but factually you will not relish it, because you know that you have hypnotized this person. Right? So therefore, Krishna doesn't want that everyone should become robots. So Krishna wants genuine devotion. So therefore, that genuine devotion can come only when he gives us the freedom to have genuine atheism. So he gives that freedom. Do you want to forget him? Okay, I'll send you back. As you surrender, I reward you accordingly. And the more you don't want to surrender, the more he pushes you away towards Bombay. The more you want to surrender, he pulls you towards Delhi. As you like, Krishna says, I fulfill. And that's the sum and substance of this verse. Please remember this formula. As you surrender, I reward accordingly.
What is more powerful, bhakti or maya?
Bhakti or maya? What is more powerful, the light or the darkness? Yes? Light.
If I knew that,
No, surely you know this answer. If you go into a dark room and switch on the light, what happens? Does the darkness remain? So, Krishna Surya Sama Maya Hoy Andhakar Yaha Krishna Taha Nahi Mayar Adhikar. Krishna is like the sun and Maya is like darkness, like the shadow. So, where you have Krishna, there is light. There is no question of any Maya or any darkness. So, Krishna Bhakti reveals Krishna to you. Krishna is manifest within you. Therefore, automatically, there is no question of Maya. Any question?
Krishna, or it's a different, distinct from Krishna.
Who is the form of Krishna?
Durga Devi.
Durga Devi. Durga Devi is a demigoddess. She is a Jivatma, just like you and me. But she is infinitely more powerful. She is
the form of Krishna. So what's
her? Not a form of Krishna.
I mean,
she is an expansion, just like you and I are expansions. The part and parcel of Krishna.
So she is the energy of Krishna.
She is the energy of Krishna, correct. She is an empowered energy of Krishna. She is empowered to perform this function of administering this material world. Just like the jail superintendent is the representative, authorized representative of the government to look after the prisoners. So we are all prisoners in this jail of the material world. And Durga Devi is she has the unpleasant, thankless task of keeping us all here within the prison.
Hare yes. Krishna, as you said that somebody is somebody is going towards the God and somebody is going away from the God, and still all are following the path of the God. So can you explain this statement?
That is what the lecture was about. That basically everyone is under the control of God, isn't it? Those who are going away from God, they are under the control of God indirectly, because they are under the influence of Maya or Durga Devi. And Durga Devi is working under the instructions of the Lord. So actually he is also under the control of the Lord, but he doesn't know it. And those who are devotees, they directly surrender to the Lord. So they are happy. So in one sense, we are all following the same path, Krishna's path, because we are all under his control at every moment. Whether we know it or not is a different matter. But we are all under his control. So it is better to be directly under Krishna's control and be happy. That's the philosophy. One last question, if any, otherwise we will wind up.
Why does Krishna wants to destroy his own energy and want his disciples to come back to him? Because Durga is also a form of energy of Krishna. And why again he wants to destroy that form and again...
Why he wants to destroy this material universe?
Yeah.
Because he wants to show that anything in this material world is temporary. It's always changing. So Krishna has made the law. His material energy acts on this principle that nothing is permanent in this material world. By nature you are permanent, you are the spirit soul, you are Satchidananda. Therefore you should not be satisfied with this temporary arrangement. So Lord Krishna has made everything in this material world temporary to show us that this is not a fit place for us to reside. That this is not our real home. Our real home is the eternal spiritual world. Therefore Lord Krishna has designed everything in the material world so that it decays and degenerates and ultimately it finishes, it gets destroyed. So one thing I want to ask everyone is, now you have all been coming for these lectures for some time and you have been hearing also the philosophy, and the sum and substance of this whole philosophy is that you have to chant the holy names, correct? So we must regularly chant the holy names in our own house also.